This is archived oral history interview number 33 with Dr. Francis Stewart, member of the Washington University School of Medicine's class of 1927. Dr. Stewart was instrumental in establishing the first Planned Parenthood Center in St. Louis. She was also a clinical instructor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the Washington University School of Medicine. This interview was conducted on May 17, 1977. Dr. Stewart, would you tell me a little bit about your early childhood and your family life? Did you have any brothers or sisters who were interested in medicine, which got you interested in medicine, or was there any other relations of yours that were interested in medicine?
Yes, my stepfather was a doctor in St. Louis
in his general practice. And when I first started out to go to college, I thought I would be interested in bacteriology, and one of my father's friends, I think, got me talking about that. And then when I went to college, because of the fact that I said I was interested in majoring in bacteriology, I was given as an advisor, I remember now, he was into the anatomy department quite a while back, and I'm not sure exactly what his name is, but he was a PhD, and it had been the great regret of his life that instead of getting a PhD, he should have had an MD, because he had lost out on several things. And one of them was, he almost was deemed, made dean of the medical school at the University of Wisconsin, but somebody that was an MD got it instead. So whenever he got a hold of anybody like me that was going to have something to do with the medical field, at least we thought we would, he said, you register as a pre-medical student. You'll never regret it. He was right. And after I got into some bacteriology, I'd rather be a doctor than be a bacteriologist.
And you attended the University of Wisconsin as an undergraduate student?
Mm-hmm. And then came here. I think one thing you wanted to know is how I happened to go to medical school here. Is that correct?
Oh, why you went to the University of Wisconsin from St. Louis and came back here to medical school?
I don't remember. We had friends that had, my parents had friends who had children there. I don't really know. I've never been away from home. I thought we all thought it was a good idea. But when it came time to go to medical school, this was my home. This was a good medical school, an excellent one.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't any reason for trying to go any place else.
Okay. Being in education here at Washington University Medical School, do you remember any of the professors who had a profound influence on you?
Yeah.
There must have been lots of them, but can you single out a few?
I will never forget to my dying day, it was Dr. Ernest Sachs, who was a neurosurgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I was interested in that field, but I wasn't in this, but he was one of the best teachers that any medical student ever had. Anything he brought to your attention, he never forgot. And in our junior year, we had what we called our new clinic, which was in the old operating room theater. And he'd bring the patient in, get her down there in the bottom, and say, get a couple of students down, what do you see? And you better tell him what you saw. But that sort of thing was an entirely different approach to trying to teach something. I think we all learned a lot from him. He was a firebrand. He had an awful temper, but he was a wonderful. He's one of the best that ever.
While you were a medical student, at that time there were not that many women who were going to medical school. Did you feel that you were under any special or unusual pressure because you were female? Did you feel that you were not treated as equally as the male students by the professors? Or, and also, did the male students treat you differently than you thought they should have?
nobody could have had any better treatment from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no prejudice whatsoever, and there was no pressure put on me or anything. In fact, I was treated as the rest of the class members were treated by everybody, by the students and the staff. And I have no patience with some of these women that I've had contact with that go around with a chip on their shoulder. I never had any problems.
Mm-hmm. Do you think part of the fact that you didn't have any problems might have been, say, because some of the prominent faculty members include women here, like Dr. Helen Graham or Dr. Trotter?
Well, of course, they were used to women.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. I mean, the faculty was used to women on the faculty, but I don't know that part of it had anything to do with it. I think we were just, as far as I was concerned, and the rest of the women in the class, we were treated just as the rest of them were. I never felt that there was any prejudice against me, and I never had any favorites for me.
Do you see any significant differences in the way medicine is taught today as opposed to the approach that was taken when you were a student?
There's definitely more demanded of the students.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many changes and so much progress over the years, and I think it's twice as hard for a medical student now as it was when I went to medical school. We thought we had a pretty hard time.
Yeah.
I don't think we have it the way they have it now. There's so much more. Everything is so more involved than it used to be.
And so much more reading to do.
So much more of everything.
Right. After you graduated from the medical school, where did you take your internship?
I took my first year here at McKenzie. And then I went to Detroit and I interned in OB/GYN then, and the following year I had a residency in OB/GYN in Detroit.
Could you describe a little bit about those experiences as an intern and also as a resident?
In what way do you mean? I can give you a lot of things about my first year as an intern.
Well,
ever. They don't work like that. They think they do, but they don't. But it was the most rewarding experience every place. And I think you expected to work and you did it. And the more you work, the more you learn.
No, thank you. You
know, it was every place, particularly here at McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
I worked hard there as I did when I was in the hospital in Detroit. But everybody else did too. But you never know, get any place if you don't work hard.
Did you find or encounter any difficulty in having the hospital accept you? Because you're the, I guess not so much since you're going into...
Yes and no. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. I knew before the internships were passed out that I was going to be an intern of eternity, because I was told by Dr. Diekman, if you want to come here, you've got it.
Mm-hmm.
I applied also at Jewish Hospital for an internship. I didn't want it, but a friend of my father was a surgeon on staff there, and he wanted me to apply. They had their new hospital then, where the location is now. They had been formerly on Delmar, west of Union, and they had moved into their new hospital not too long before that. And he didn't see any reason why they didn't have any women interns, and they didn't have any. So he asked me as a favor to him to apply. He said, you're not going to get it. He said, I know the people on the intern committee, and they're not going to let any women in there. But please do it. So I did, and my answer was, we have no facilities for quarters for women interns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't apply anyplace else. When I went to Detroit, I hadn't applied anyplace else except that hospital.
Why did you leave St. Louis to go to Detroit?
Well, I thought, at that time, I didn't think the opportunity was good enough for me to stay here, because Things are different now than they were at that time. However, Dr. Schwartz told me that I could stay if I wanted to, but I decided I could further myself a little better if I went.
Okay. Then after you did your residency in Detroit, did you come back to St. Louis to start practice?
No.
Okay. Now I understand that you were involved in setting up St. Louis's first contraceptive clinic. When was that, and were there other people involved? Go ahead.
I was involved to a certain extent, but I was not involved the way other people were. This thing started out with Dr. Fred Tausig and Dr. Robert Crossan. And I don't remember the exact date, but it was very early in 1932. And I remember I was called by Dr. Tausig and asked to come to this meeting where they were just starting to talk about it. And I went to two or three meetings at his home. He was there, and Mrs. Buck, who was a social worker, and later to be the executive director of the clinic when it opened, was there, and Dr. Crossan, and there were a couple of other people, and I don't remember who they were. And this thing was talked about, and it was a hope that something like this could be started, and that followed up with some more meetings and getting more people interested. And the clinic finally opened in the first of August, 1933. And they had their first board meeting, which I was not a member of, in 1932. But at that time, I was doing what we called our maternal health clinic here at the medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they got me involved in that. When the clinic first opened, they had one session a week, and Dr. Crossan did that. By February of, that was 32, yeah, by February of 33, there were three clinics a week, and I worked one of them, Dr. Crossan worked one, and Dr. Leslie Patton, who's been gone many a day, worked that too. Then they finally stopped it. I mean, they thought it was best for them to get started on it in the beginning. And then I did a couple of clinics a week, and then they gradually brought in other doctors over a period of time.
What was the name of the clinic when it started out?
When it started out, it was the Maternal Health Association of Missouri.
Okay.
And it was about 1943, I think, somewhere around there, that it was changed to the Planned Parenthood Clinic of Missouri, and then it was shortly after that was changed. The name was changed to the Planned Parenthood Clinic of St. Louis, and that's the but it is affiliated with the National Planned Parenthood Association.
Okay, now was this clinic a neighborhood clinic, or was it set up to serve the whole city of St. Louis?
It was set up to serve the whole city of St. Louis, and the first clinic that was opened was on in a flat on the second floor on Euclid, right near McPherson. And they had three rooms. The patients were accepted only on a referral basis from a social agency or a physician, and they must be white, married women. And then later on, they conferred with the Urban League and some other social agency and decided they would accept, as we said at that time, colored women. Now we say black women. And but everybody had to be married. And it was some years before they began to accept unmarried women if they had had a child. If they were a mother, they would accept an unmarried woman. And then finally, any woman who had a child, whether she was married or unmarried, didn't make any difference. Then they changed it that any unmarried woman, but she didn't have to have a child, could be accepted.
Could you describe a little bit about these sessions? You said you had, I think, 3 a week or something like that.
That was at the very beginning.
Were they a one-on-one, like you talking with the patient coming in?
Yes, you saw the doctor saw the patient individually. And we had the social worker. At first, it was just Mrs. Buck. And over the years, of course, they added more staff. But the patient was interviewed and the history taken by the social worker. And she was talked to for some time. And the purpose of her visit there was gone into. In other words, why did you come? And what do you expect out of this? And she had quite a counseling session. And then the patient was seen by the doctor for her examination. And then whatever birth control method was being given to her was explained to her by the physician.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And most of them at that time were using doctrine.
Was there any opposition to...
There was a lot of opposition. And at one time, one of the first things that happened was patients were allowed to get their supplies after they had been to the clinic, of course. If they were using a diaphragm, they were allowed to get their jellies with their creams that they were using had sent to them by mail. And then Lord Michael Columbus or somebody tried to stop that by mail, and that wasn't working out too well. Anyway, they finally got that straightened out, and there was a post office rule and government regulation that it could be mailed. Then one of the next things, they had to get a city permit every year, and it's always been just automatic. And all of a sudden, the clinic was informed by a newspaper reporting that they were not going to get the permit, that the Lord of Aldermen was going to deny it. There had been a lot of that. I think that was the Knights of Columbus, too. Anyway, they rallied their supporters, and they went down, and they had meetings, and they had all kinds of things, and the whole group of people decided that they were going to go down and practically picket the place. But that got straightened out, and the permit was given. Then we had another thing one time that was rather amusing. The patients were given, after they were seen by the doctor, this prescription blank was written, and then they took it up to the front, and the material was given to them. That was usually done by a volunteer worker there. And then all of a sudden, there was a problem that came up. I don't remember who started it, but it was a problem. And they wanted to know who was handing these materials to the patient. That the Missouri law said that it must be given to the patient by a doctor, or it must be given to the patient by a pharmacist. So somebody conceived the idea of getting a big market basket, and they fill the prescriptions, put them in the market basket, have the patient sit up in the waiting room up in the front, and when they had a basket full, he'd call one of the doctors, and you'd go up and you'd say, Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Smith, and you'd hand them that. That lasted for a little while, and then we got that straightened out. But there hasn't been any real serious problems since then.
Was there any opposition from the neighbors?
No.
In the area?
No. Mm-hmm. Mostly, the neighbors of the clinic sites were usually not in residential.
Mm-hmm.
We are in a residential area right now.
What's that?
The clinic recently moved to an apartment building. Don't ask me what the address is. I don't know. I never know addresses. It's an apartment building on the corner of Newstead and West Pine. We were on Del Mar. Block east of King Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And the neighborhood got too awfully bad and terrible. And so this is a big apartment building. And there's nobody people live, I think, and there had been a doctor's office on the first floor. On one end of it was a drugstore, on the other side, and on the youth, on the, did I say youth, or did I miss it, say Taylor? Newstead.
Newstead.
Yeah.
Newstead was part.
There's a restaurant and a grocery store and things like that. So, but outside of that, it's purely residential neighborhood. And we have our clinic on the first floor there for the doctor's office. So, there's no opposition there, but the rest of it had been more commercial than anything else, so there would never have been any opposition. Mm-hmm.
Was there ever any attempt or any consideration given to, say, when you limited the clinic just to married women, did you ever bring in the husbands to counsel with them also, or is it just strictly seen?
Now there is some of it, but not too much of that right now. But at that time, the husbands never came.
Today, do the husbands come in on their own free will, or?
Once in a while, we have a husband that comes in and wants to talk to the doctor too, but there's more of that that goes on with the social workers, and there's not an awful lot of that. Right now, which is an interesting point, for the last couple of years now, there's a vasectomy clinic mm-hmm. in connection with it. They have that once a week. Thursday night. Mm-hmm. A couple of urologists that take care of that, but that's run by the Clinical Association.
Do you find?
They don't get many husbands mm-hmm. coming with their wives. So you may bring them there, but they're sitting in the waiting room, and most of them, that's as far as they go.
Right.
Most of them.
I guess it's their responsibility. Do you find that there's a trend that your clientele, your patients, are becoming younger all the time?
Oh, there's no question about mm-hmm. it. Definitely. An awful lot. I don't mean just college, I mean high school.
Yeah. Junior high school.
And we haven't had any sixth graders yet. But surprising. I shouldn't really say that because we do get them. Some of these mothers, mostly the colored ones. Mm. I can't get used to just black. you'd be surprised how many of the mothers. They've had one girl, older girl in the family that had an illegitimate child, and they've got some younger daughters, so they don't trust them because of the older ones, and they'll bring them in.
Is there anything else that you would like to say about the work of the clinic? Where you think it'll be going, the future of it?
Well, it's changing all the time. There are more procedures that are being done at the clinic at the birth control, what we used to call the old birth control clinic. There's much more that's being done now. At first, we did absolutely nothing except give the patient contraceptive advice. And if we found any minor medical condition, we said, well, we can't treat you, you'll have to go to your doctor. Well, now, for minor things, we do have medications for them, and we do give information about that. But anything of any serious nature, of course, we don't try to do anything about it. We refer them. But we're doing more and more all the time. And some years back, we started doing pap tests. We started doing gonorrhea cultures. Besides our regular examinations, we run a pregnancy testing clinic. And there's a big educational department. They do a lot of work all over town, mostly on a solicited basis. You know, the agencies or the schools or something come to them. They have mm-hmm. a little problem about that recently. And they're pro-life people.
Mm-hmm.
They had a course set up for teachers, not students, in the Kirkwood School. Teachers and counselors and guidance counselors and that sort of thing to give them an insight into what the sex education business would be. And the pro-life people made such an awful fuss that it was quickly dropped it. But they're still doing a good bit. And of course now we do not do abortion, but we do refer the patients who come to us who are pregnant and want abortion, we refer them mostly to the reproductive health service. We have a lot of those.
Do you have any other community interests that you're involved with?
Oh, not so much anymore, no, because I'm going around getting lazy. I don't do this anymore.
How many hours, this is going back to the clinic, how many hours do you spend there now?
Right now?
Yes. Is it like your full-time practice at this point?
Well, I do more of that than I do anything else. I have four clinics a week at the clinic center.
at the county hospital. The man I have a maternal, a prenatal clinic, a city prenatal clinic down the 13th in Wyoming. I do that. But I don't do any deliveries anymore. I quit that 5 years ago. I do all the deliveries, but I cut my private practice now. I'm sorry, I've worked hard enough, but I do I keep busy. But if I don't feel like working, I don't do it anymore.
Are you active in many professional societies associated with medicine?
Well, I'm a member of the County Medical Society and the Missouri State Medical Society, and I'm a founding fellow of the American College of Golden Obstetrics and Gynecology. I did belong to the AMA, but I quit a few years back.
I was wondering whether you'd be willing to talk on some of the current problems of medical practice. Obviously, there's many problems, but to suggest a few, let's say malpractice insurance, which is something...
That is a terrible problem. It's a terrible problem. And I don't know what's going to happen about it. I don't think anybody really does. But, where was this? Not many too long ago, some doctor sued the patient for suing him for malpractice, and he won the case. And I think that is going to make, that sort of thing, if it goes on very much, is going to make a lot of difference in the number of malpractice suits that are brought. But I think a lot of the malpractice suits are instigated by shyster lawyers. Maybe I shouldn't say shyster, but in my book, some of them are. But I don't know. I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen. But it's a real problem. And then we have all this government stuff, which I don't care much for. But somebody asked me not very long ago if I would start in medical school with what's going on right now. If I were a young person, and I said, no, I wouldn't. I don't want to work for Uncle Sam. Of course, in part, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
For instance, my clinics that I have at the county hospital, that's funded by the government. But I don't know. I think we're getting entirely too much poking into our medical business by people that don't know anything about it, and that's why I resent it.
Okay, what about the cost of medical care? That is certainly a problem, and just recently President Carter suggested a 9% ceiling on increase in hospital costs.
Yes, I
know. Certainly, it goes even beyond the hospital. It probably affects the operation of neighborhood clinics. Could you discuss that a little bit, please?
I don't see how he can say to the hospital or any other group like that that you have to cut this down, your fees have to be lowered, because what the hospitals are paying their employees and for their supplies and everything is not going to go down. That's going up all the time. But one of the things that a lot of the people resent is that they say it costs too much to be sick. Well, it does. It costs an awful lot. But the doctors aren't getting what the hospitals are getting in proportion. I mean, the doctor's fees haven't gone up that much as the hospitals have. But how anybody who doesn't have any insurance could be in the hospital right now, I don't know. I'm telling you to pay for it. So, what the answer is, who knows? But I can't see where Carter's plan is going to help things any.
That's because who do you think it'll have a negative effect on the quality
of... It's bound to. It's bound to, because hospital's expenses are not going to go down. Their income is going to go down, but their expenses are going to keep on going up. So what are they going to do?
So it may totally eliminate medical care for the the poverty level people.
No, I wouldn't say no. I don't think that. I don't think it'll totally eliminate it, but I think the quality of care is going to be damaged, definitely. I don't see how it could help the patient.
Now that your class reunion is over, do you have any, or have you given any thought to the past 50 years, what you have done, changes that you would have made if you were starting all over again?
Would you have started all over again, the way things are at the present time? No, I don't. I'm sure I wouldn't. If my daughter wanted to go to medical school right now, I would say no. Don't do it.
Any other reflections in the past 50 years?
No, it's been very worthwhile. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed every moment of it. And I don't know what I would have liked to have done if I hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret it. I mean, anything. But with the way things are now, I'm sure I wouldn't start out if I were a young person now. Somebody's got to do it, though.
Okay, that's all the questions I have. Do you have anything else that you would like to add? In regards to your practice, the medical education, the
reunion? I think I was given a very good education.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it's the education that the present-day medical students are getting is different than we got, because there's more to learn. There's more that we know about things now that we didn't know years ago. But I still think we got a very good medical education. I'm glad I got it.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I don't know.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.